God is a Shark, a Hannibal Fic. Written by Higher Magic. Read by Dr. Fumbles McStupid. With the rating explicit. The archive warning, graphic depictions of violence. The relationship, Will Graham, Hannibal Lecter. Additional tags, alternate universe soulmates. Chronic pain. Light masochism. Light sadism. Manipulation. Dark Will Graham. Canon typical violence. Canon compliant. Blowjobs, and Will Graham doesn't need help. Summary. In that moment, Will understands two things. The first is that Dr. Lecter is his soulmate. The second is that he's a fucking liar. Will Graham has been in pain for most of his life. He used to cry all the time as a baby, though never explicitly... Though never explicitly said, he knows that his father blames that on his mother's abrupt and complete departure from their lives. No one likes to hear a child cry, least of all a child born out of wedlock to a boat repairman with no prospects or much ambition. Bill Graham had always had a wallowing sort of contentment in his life. He was the kind of man who had never aspired to much. A shield against disappointment he carried until the alcohol abuse got the best of him and took him out, liver first. When Will was younger and complained about the constant low-grade headaches, his sensitive stomach sometimes rendering him unable to eat for days at a time, leaving him weak and skinny as a twig, the school nurse had scoffed it off as a pitiful attempt at a sixth grader to try to get out of classes. It took a threat to call CPS for his father to cough up the money to take him to a clinic that billed per income. There was nothing wrong with him, physically, aside from his malnutrition and worryingly constant dehydration. The stomach aches could be caused by popping painkillers on an empty stomach, a habit that, to this day, Will has kept up. When one lives in constant, chronic pain, one learns to take the lesser of two evils and all their grains of salt. Perhaps his soulmate is a pathological liar, the kindly nurse technician finally suggested, when his blood work came back fine and no cause could be found. Bill Graham hadn't had much to say about that. He never had much to say about anything. But he would stare at Will sometimes, when the whiskey had put a sheen over his vision and made his hands go lax. He grabbed Will's wrist when Will took his empty glass from him one night, 16 and still so skinny, pitifully frail no matter how much he forced himself to eat. "The worst pain I ever felt was when your mama said she loved me," he told Will, slurred and grieving, tears in his eyes. It's the only time Will has ever seen him cry. "Don't let her lie to you like that. Whoever your soulmate is, don't let her get a fucking chance, William." Will had nodded, just so his father would let him go, shaking, a bruise forming on his bony wrist. It hadn't hurt, or maybe it had, but it was all the same deep down. Aches in his bones and tension in his skull, a low-grade fever of a body constantly flooded with cortisol and adrenaline from trying to identify and flee the source of its pain. Bill Graham never spoke of that night. Not even when he was sick in bed, yellowed all over so that the eyes Will inherited looked unnatural, fey bright. He took Will's hand and squeezed it tight, and Will has never lied to his father, never once felt the urge. It wouldn't matter. His mother struck a death blow already. He's been bleeding out for 16 years. Will often wondered how much of himself came from his mother, how much from his father. And that moment, on that day when Bill Graham breathed his last, Will realized it didn't much matter. Dr. Lecter is poised and calm, radiating a delighted intrigue when Jack first introduces them. Will has a splitting headache that hasn't gone away since that morning. His soulmate, whoever they are, is a real pathological son of a bitch. He studied this kind of thing, the way their species' long-lost super-conscience has reminded them of the brain stems, communicating through connection they've mostly aged out of. Pain is the first and last thing a brain is capable of feeling. It is the only thing primal enough to overpower conscious thought. The only way that Will can rationalize the fact that he's always in pain is that his soulmate is in a position to be constantly lying about who he or she is. Maybe they're a spy, deep on an undercover mission in some dangerous situation. Maybe they're closeted and forced to lie about who they are because it's not safe for them to come out. Maybe they just really, really like lying. Will can't be sure. He doesn't know how this pain could have been so constant since the day he was born, How could it have grown so much more intense on his 11th birthday? How it sharpens and swells, scalding hot like a knife through his melted butter brain, tenderized by relentless agony, when Dr. Lecter says, "Can't turn mine off any more than you can turn yours off." And in that moment, Will understands two things. The first is that Dr. Lecter is his soulmate. The second is that he's a fucking liar. Emotion vortexes inside his chest, a sea of newly freed animals driven mad by constant torture. With wailing and gnashing of teeth, he grimaces and rises to his feet in a flurry of shaky hands and haphazard glances. "If you'll excuse me, I have to give a lecture on psychoanalyzing." He spits the lie and watches, gratified, when Dr. Lecter winces. Then how his face slackens with realization. He hears Jack's rushed apologies and excuses, as Will turns his back and flees from the office. A myriad of missing girls' faces flashing in quick succession, along with the pounding, rabbit-pulse beat of his heart. He feels sick to his stomach and might lose his breakfast. But it's exhilarating to know, to see, just a fraction of the hurt Will has carried all his life be volleyed back into Dr. Lecter's court. It's a delicious schadenfreude to watch his lying soulmate stumble in place and skin his palms. Will leaves the building and drives home, ignoring the unknown number that blinks fitfully on his phone screen. It's a Maryland number, but Will doesn't need to guess. Jack has no qualms about giving away Will's contact information, and he's sure Dr. Lecter is charismatic enough to charm whatever information he pleases out of dear old Jack. He doesn't want to think about it. In all his years, Will has never particularly wanted to meet his soulmate, not after the literal decades of pain the other person, the other man, has put him through. But curiosity is a shark, and works itself into a frenzy when it senses blood in the water. His phone stops ringing, eventually pinging with a text message instead. Will waits until he has to stop for gas to check his phone.
"Will, this is Dr. Hannibal Lecter. I apologize for whatever sour taste our conversation may have left behind. If you permit me, I'd like to make it up to you."
Their evolution hasn't caught up with technology. The thrum of pain can't transmit itself through keypads and binary codes. Will doesn't know if Hannibal is truly sorry. His level of pain feels the same as it always does. Back to a low-grade thrum in his skull. He traps his tongue between his teeth and bites down until the throbbing lessens. Then fishes through his center console for his trusty bottle of aspirin. It's almost empty. He'll need to restock. He swallows two dry, puts the gas nozzle back in its holster, grabs his receipt, and peels out of the gas station without answering the text. At home, his dogs greet him with a chorus of happy huffs and curious snuffles. Animals are suggested for those suffering with bond sickness. Not a true diagnosis, but the only thing doctors could really put on his chart that would account for his higher temperature and pain symptoms. He's not sick because he's not bonded. His soulmate isn't dead. Will isn't grieving his loss. He's sick because his mate makes him sick, every minute of every hour of every day. Will swallows as he looks at his phone. Two missed calls before the text. Dr. Lecter must have looked for him in the building before deeming Will gone and calling him instead. There's a text from Jack as well, but it's just with case information and a reminder to Will that they have a flight scheduled for the following day, out to Minnesota to investigate the latest abduction. Winston nudges his thigh, snorting against Will's trouser leg, his tail wagging slowly from side to side. He's the most emotionally attuned to Will, despite being the newest. Animals who know pain well tend to stick together. Will looks down at the dog.
"Should I?"
he wonders, even as he feels curiosity's shark swim closer, fearing neither shallows nor predators. It would be satisfying, the creature thinks, to be able to finally bite back. Winston, predictably, says nothing, merely sits on his haunches and yawns wide. Will huffs and pets his soft, floppy ear.
"Yeah, I think so too."
Will doesn't take Hannibal up on his offer. Not that that seems to matter. He has firmly dug his claws into Jack's side, convinced him of his usefulness, and worms his way into Will's motel room with the promise of breakfast and an incredibly tentative ceasefire.
"God forbid we become friendly."
Will looks at him, at the way the sunlight from behind the window streams in, warming the air around them despite how chilly it is outside. He's older than Will, by about a decade, if Will had to guess. Old enough to have started lying by the time Will was born. Will doesn't tell lies if he can help it. He bites his tongue more often than not. He wonders, absently, if lies of omission burn the same as speaking them outright. Maybe, then Hannibal has been in enough pain for Will to feel righteous vindication. "I don't find you that interesting," he says coolly. Hannibal's eyes tighten at the corners, a very subtle indication of feeling pain inflicted. Will hides a smile into his coffee cup and sips, determined not to break eye contact first. Then Hannibal smiles. This light in his eyes that strikes Will as proud. "You will," he says, and for the first time, and perhaps forever, Will doesn't feel pain. It stalls him in place, almost makes him choke on his coffee. Can conviction be strong enough to turn into truth? Can Hannibal read him so well? Or does he simply believe the pull of a soulmate bond is enough that Will, of course, would find him interesting? Hannibal must love being the subject of curiosity, of interest. Will does not. "Is that an offer of courtship, Hannibal?" he asks, once he can convince his molars to stop gnawing into the sides of his tongue. His dentist grows hoarse with warning Will against chewing on the delicate organ, warning him that grinding his teeth and sinking them in over and over will only cause him trouble down the line.
"If you'd like it to be," Hannibal replies. "Soulmates don't have to be romantic."
Will's eyes narrow. "Do you have a girlfriend? Wife? Boyfriend?" he challenges. Hannibal's smile widens.
"No, I am a solitary man by nature."
"It's a lie. And not a lie." It fizzles sour sweet on Will's tongue, like too much candy all at once. It hurts in much the same way, burning the insides of his cheeks and the base of his throat.
"Do you?" Hannibal counters.
Will shakes his head. "Just me and my dogs," he replies. That's not a lie, and he sees Hannibal's shoulders ease infinitesimally with relief. It's enough to make him smile. "I always thought I'd marry my soulmate if I ever found them, but I never expected to find them." A strange look passes over Hannibal's face, yearning and fond. Will gets the impression that, if he could, he'd pull out a ring and get on one knee right now. It's a disgustingly romantic notion, but makes that sour sweet feeling settle low in his stomach and spread out like a sugar rush. He's giddy.
"So, you're not averse to this being a courtship," Hannibal says, nodding to the food.
To themselves, hunkered down around this tiny motel table, their only connection to the outside world being the soft golden sun and the close-by roar of morning traffic. He takes another sip of coffee, lets Hannibal dangle, unsure, on the end of his makeshift lure.
"I'm not," he finally relents,
because he knows enough about himself to know that he can fall in love with anyone, and Hannibal is handsome in that distinguished older gentleman kind of way. And it would all be rather neat, wouldn't it? Will always did feel a visceral kind of pleasure when the last puzzle piece slots into place. Hannibal's smile widens, the lines around his eyes and mouth growing deep.
"Then it's settled," he says, "though perhaps we should wait before informing Uncle Jack."
"Already trying to get me to lie with you, aren't you?" Will arches a brow, but concedes with a nod. God knows that would be a nightmare of paperwork at the very least. Jack probably wouldn't ask Hannibal to continue to be Will's psychiatrist. He wouldn't be invited along to crime scenes. And if there's one thing Will knows, it's to keep one's enemies close. If he is to figure out why Hannibal's mere existence causes him pain, he cannot do so from a distance.
"I've never been wooed before," he says honestly,
which makes Hannibal brighten in a mix of intrigue, eagerness, and a subtle flash of disbelief. But Will isn't lying, and he knows Hannibal feels that. "I can't promise to make it easy on you."
"The fact that you want to be is enough for me," Hannibal replies,
and the pulse of genuine feels so foreign, so warm, that Will's breath catches.
"And if, at the end of the day, we're not compatible as partners, I'd like for us to still be friends."
Will's fingers flex around his tiny motel coffee mug. He sucks in a breath and swallows down the feeling. Honesty, relief, is so foreign to him. It's addictive. He thinks, and feels like armor wrapped around his bones, making him stronger. Even if the feeling doesn't last, he wants it so badly he's gagging for it.
"I'm not very good at lying," he murmurs, heavy with meaning.
Hannibal merely smiles and nods to Will's unfinished meal.
"Finish your breakfast."
Elise Nichols is tucked safely into bed. Marissa Schurer lies dead and impaled on the horns of a stag in the middle of a field.
The Shrike has been busy,
Hannibal murmurs at his side. The sour, sweet not-lie taste stings the back of Will's throat. This isn't the Shrike, but someone is trying very hard to make it seem like it is. It's all wrong, though. But it doesn't make sense for Hannibal to know that, too. He wonders briefly if there is another shark in the water, if they will know each other through the haze of blood and the frenzy of hunger. He chews on his tongue and pops more aspirin. Hannibal's fingers twitch at his side, as though wanting to reach and grab Will's wrist. Will is reminded of his father.
Don't let her lie to you. Don't give her a fucking chance.
But he already did. Bill Graham might have assumed Will's soulmate was a woman. Statistically, there's no reason not to, he supposes. But Will knows better. It doesn't soften the blow of that drunkard's plea. Will promised he wouldn't, but here he is. He wonders if souls and skeletons can feel pain in the grave, in the afterlife. If there is a hell, it is simply filled with liars, burning, 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 with no end in sight. If that's the case, is Will in hell already? His head feels warm, and he's unsteady on his feet. Hannibal's breakfast offering, despite being hearty and filling, churned in his stomach like uncooked slime.
So it seems, he agrees slowly.
But this isn't the Shrike. Hannibal will know he's not lying, and yet his shoulders tense.
Who then?
He asks curiously, a mild-mannered question, holding no motive. Will's nose burns like he lit a fire in his nostrils. Deer velvet is stuck into the wounds. The body stopped bleeding long ago. The wind tousles her hair. Her skin remains free of goosebumps, frozen into stillness forever. He thinks about throwing her body in the ocean and wonders if it's fresh enough to draw sharks. Jack calls for his attention and Will goes. The rising in his ears overwhelms him as he empties his clip into Garrett Jacob Hobbs' body until he goes limp and slumps to the floor. Abigail Hobbs is bleeding out, and Will falls to his knees to try and stymie the bleeding until the EMTs arrive. Her blood is scalding hot against his skin, and it hurts to breathe, like he's the one with 10 bullets in his chest, filling his lungs with blood. Hannibal's hand knocks his away, cold as the grave in comparison. Will gasps, panting as he watches Hannibal flatten his fingers along the severed skin and grip tight, holding her still and treshing her gently as her wide, panicked eyes look between them. She's gasping like a fish. Maybe she's trying to speak. She is a single anchovy, alone in this big, wide world, her father a barracuda. Not unlike a shark, he thinks. The EMTs come and stabilize her before wheeling her away. Jack bellows to clear the crime scene, hustling Will and Hannibal out of there so that the forensics can do their work. There isn't much to tell that isn't obvious, but Will goes away trembling. His wrists feel weak, like the knockback of his gun should have broken them. He walks out of the house, Hannibal on his right, the wraith of Garrett Jacob Hobbs on his left. Hannibal reaches for him, their bloody palms smearing together. Will is surprised to find his palm smooth, lacking any calluses, and shudders at the slickness of the blood, the iron tang of it in his mouth. He resists the urge to touch his face.
"Do you think she'll survive?"
he asks, watching the ambulance doors slam shut, the vehicle peeling away with a blare of sirens, followed by a black FBI SUV. Hannibal joins him in watching. Garrett Jacob Hobbs watches the house.
"I don't know," he replies. "If she's a fighter, maybe. If they stop the bleeding in time."
Will swallows, bites the inside of his cheek. He doesn't ask if Hannibal wants her to. He doesn't want to hear another lie. Not right now. He looks at the wraith at his side and wonders how much pain he was in, if his wife was the source of it, and if he felt a moment of relief when she died. A few blissful seconds before Will replaced it for her. Hobbs' eyes are already white. They were pale in life, and quickly lose their color in death. He turns to Will, grinning with blood in his teeth.
"Isn't it blissful?" he sighs.
"Closure." Will doesn't know what he means by that. Abigail survives long enough to be in stable but critical condition. They'll be flying her back to Baltimore for further questioning once she's strong enough to move. Will doesn't visit her.
He wants to believe that she is innocent, and is unwilling to have her lie to his face. Will knows he's not normal. He's oversensitive. Lies aren't supposed to hurt all the time. Only your soulmate should carry any kind of weight. But Will has been in pain all his life, and he's learned to separate the spikes of individuals from the background white noise. He knew when his father would lie, telling Will that the fish he brought home was a gift from a client instead of pilfered from the dock sellers. He knew when his closest friend at age 18 lied about hooking up with Ashley Major at prom. He knew when his commanding officer on the force turned him down for a promotion because there weren't any positions open. Will knows when people lie. He does not want to know when Abigail lies. Hannibal, he's beginning to understand, flirts with lies the way one might make excuses for skipping the gym or sneaking a chocolate bar on a cheat day, answering questions with questions, drawing comparative metaphors that amount to nothing. Hannibal is lying about who he is. At first, Will wonders if he's lying about something like his medical license or immigration papers. But no, that wouldn't have stretched far back enough for when Will first felt it. Hannibal tells him about his time in France, in Italy, then moving to America for his surgery residency. None of that smacked of falsehood. That isn't what Hannibal is lying about. But in close proximity now, Will's constant aches and pains have grown stronger, the same way staring at the sun leaves spots behind his eyelids. It gets worse. It grows fangs. It rips through his skin and punctures his skull. Hannibal's a fucking liar. But Will, for the life of him, cannot figure out what the lie is. He asks Alana. She knows Hannibal from her psychology residency. She tells him that Hannibal had been her mentor during her doctoral program. She is not lying. She tells him she's worried about him. That's not a lie either. Will shrugs it off. He asks Jack, who tells him Hannibal was a referral from Alana. He asks Beverly, who says she knew about Hannibal from lectures and hearsay around the forensic teams, but nothing in great detail. She didn't know him personally. Marissa Schurer's body is no longer suspended in a field, in his memory, but falling through a vast, dark ocean, surrounded by circling sharks. Will wakes up to a bright light in his face. He's freezing and barefoot, wandering the road outside his home. The officer that found him is fresh and young, more concerned that Will is a wayward drug addict or a particularly well-groomed homeless man that will lunge at him given the first opportunity. That's how they train Virginia's finest these days. Shoot first, ask questions later. A black stag follows him home, behind the police car. He calls Hannibal once he's safe, tucked up in bed and nursing a pounding headache.
Will.
It's late, almost enough to be early, but Hannibal answers on the second ring. Light sleeper or also awake?
Are you all right?
I'm sick, Will breathes, sweaty and shivering with fever. It hurts everywhere. He's sweating through his clothes and blankets and yet another yellow stain on his mattress. Why won't Hannibal just tell him? I'm sleepwalking, hallucinating.
Hallucinating?
Will opens his eyes and sees the feathered stag bluster in the corner of his room. It's bleeding, 10 gunshots in its chest and flank. The blood is black and oozes like spilled oil, and evaporates the second it touches the ground. The dogs slumber on, unaware.
Yes.
Hannibal is silent a beat too long.
I have a friend I can call, he says. Get you an early appointment. I'll be there in the morning to drive you.
Will chews on his tongue.
What are you doing awake at this hour?
Hannibal huffs a short laugh.
I'm often awake at night, he tells Will in a steady, soothing tone, as though he might lull Will back to sleep through his voice alone. It's almost working. No rest for the wicked, as they say.
A powerful shudder racks Will's body. It's not painful, not quite.
Are you wicked? He wants to ask.
The stag hacks in the corner, a racking, coughing bellow that sounds like death throes.
Don't make an appointment, Will says hoarsely. It's probably just stress. I'll be fine.
Hannibal's concern tastes like coffee grounds.
If you're sure.
I'm sure. I'm sorry I woke you, or bothered you, even if I didn't wake you. I'll see you later.
You can call or visit me any time, Will.
Hannibal murmurs,
and the blossom of sincerity hurts almost as much as his lies do. The timeline of lying is a frivolous and hard-to-pin-down thing. Someone may say something with the utmost conviction and not be lying if they believe it to be true. A colorblind man is not lying when he says the sky is gray. A late student is not lying if they blame their tardiness on sleeping through their alarm, not realizing that they never said it in the first place. Usually, the after-effects of lies are things Will feels in his spine, a foundational shift of a core truth that sends his head reeling.
"A little birdie told me you were found sleepwalking last night."
Fury embeds itself in his molars, making them feel like fangs.
"Patrolling my streets, are you?"
he hisses at Jack.
Jack frowns at him. "It's in my interest to keep the FBI's assets safe and accounted for,"
he says with that stern, fatherly tone Will hates so much. Jack is not his father, and Bill Graham never spoke to him like that. If nothing else, Will can say this. His father loved him like an old army friend, some companion he had grown used to having around and felt comfortable sharing space with. Not like a son, but Will turned out okay. He thinks.
"No one's hunting me as far as I'm aware," Will says.
Jack sighs through his nose, presses his lips together, and fixes Will with a look.
"Have you told Hannibal about your episode?"
Episode. Will detests the word. His doctors used to call his bad days episodes. Some inevitable serial on cable TV. Always repeated. A comforting standard in his daily life.
"Yes,"
Will says flatly. "As a matter of fact, I did."
"And what did he have to say about it?"
"He suggested I see a doctor." Jack's brows rise. He waits with patient, meaningful silence.
"Not necessary," Will insists.
It doesn't feel like a lie. Even if it was, Jack isn't the kind of person to pay attention to random pangs of pain. Jack's expression doesn't change, so Will can't tell either way. "We'll be discussing it in more details at my appointment tonight. Confidentially."
"I only want what's best for you, Will."
In the moment, Will believes that Jack is telling the truth. Later, he will feel that axis tilting shift, that abrupt and sudden wayward slant, and know that Jack's best for Will is not what's best for Will at all. Hannibal offers Will wine at his appointments, the low light and comfortable ambience of his office making it feel more like a date. Will is content to let the comparison and shift fly. They are soulmates, after all. And if Hannibal wants to woo him, who is Will to deny him the pleasure? They don't talk about things like that, though. Will doesn't know Hannibal's favorite color, or the movie he hates that everyone loves, or how he likes his steak cooked. He doesn't know what Hannibal's first car was, or the name of his rival during his surgery days, or how his first fumbling attempts at intimacy in the back of some darkened French theater went with the debutante de jour. All is the better. Will was never good at first date stuff, and he thinks he might break his glass with jealousy if he ever meets any of Hannibal's previous partners. Envy is as intimately familiar to him as pain, and he's a firm believer in someone's past remaining in the past. Hannibal has their chairs scooted close enough that their knees could touch, their ankles bracket. Will sips his wine and lets the full-bodied flavor blossom on his tongue, rich and berry-like and just a little sharp.
"I hope it's to your liking,"
Hannibal says as he takes his seat, effortlessly unbuttoning a suit jacket as he settles.
"You strike me as more of a whiskey man."
"I like what I like," Will replies. "I like this." Hannibal smiles.
"Good."
They sit in silence, uncaring for the ever-ticking clock. Will is not at the behest of the hour hand. He can come and go as he pleases. He could keep Hannibal here until midnight. Later, until dawn breaks, and bathes them in warm golden light again. If it weren't for the dogs, he might be more tempted.
"I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that Jack already contacted me today,"
Hannibal begins. He's always the one to break the silence first, which amuses Will. He senses that his silence is the only one Hannibal cannot bear for too long.
"About your adventure last night."
Guilt pangs through Will's tender ribcage. Cacophonous like a rolling boulder, Indiana Jones style. "I feel bad for calling you so late, or so early."
"I told you, Will. I was awake. Even if I wasn't, it wouldn't matter."
The sincerity, addictive and heady as the wine, eases that boulder's shuddering path and brings it to a steady incline, where it loses momentum and grinds to a halt. "Consider me at your beck and call." Will smiles at that. "Careful, Dr. Lecter. I might take you up on that." A flicker of something, buried quickly.
"Do you remember the events leading up to that excursion?" he asks instead. "A particularly vivid dream?"
His lips twitch with humor.
"Bad fish dinner?"
Will scoffs. Hannibal knows Will likes to fish, and prepares his dinners from it himself. Will also knows he turned down a dinner invitation, citing his pounding headache and desire to be alone. Had he taken Hannibal up on it, could he have even escaped the cavernous maw of Hannibal's homestead? Unlikely. The place is cozy and maze-like, a hoard of treasures and secrets inside. The library alone could keep Will entertained for hours, and that's nothing to say of the man inside it. Will licks his lips, tasting the wine. Hannibal's eyes dart to the motion, dark and hungry. Shark-like, Will thinks.
"I was dreaming of a stag," he says. "It walked with me, a companion neither guiding nor following, urging me on towards some unknowable destination."
"The stag is often described as the king of the forest," Hannibal tells him. "A symbol of leadership, grace, nobility, a connection to masculine energy."
Will snorts.
"I don't feel disconnected from my masculine energy." Hannibal smiles. "The Celts believed the stag was a messenger between the physical and spiritual world," he says. "The Native Americans associated it with sensitivity and intuition, neither of which you're lacking." He pauses to sip his wine. Will mimics him. "Is there some lingering spirit on the edge of your psyche? Some ghost trying to speak to you?"
Hobb's pale eyes flash to life behind Will's eyelids. His voice sing-songingly.
"Do you see? Closure. It's there. Do you see it?"
He meets Hannibal's eyes, finding them unblinking. Two pinpricks of nightshade in the welcoming gloom.
"My intuition tells me a lot of things," Will says. "We all have ghosts."
Another flash of something. Not buried so quickly. A glint of iron in snow. Frigid temperatures. A gnawingly empty stomach. Will sucks in a breath and shifts his weight, spreading his knees wide as his fingernails tick along the bowl of his wine glass.
"Your sensitivities leave you more susceptible than most," Hannibal murmurs, and for the first time in Will's life, he doesn't view it as a burden, because Hannibal doesn't view it as a burden. All the great martyrs died for something.
"We never really spoke about what happened in the Hobbs house. You killed a man."
"Not the first time." It's Hobb's voice whispering to him at his shoulder, hot as the stag's breath had been.
"He was a threat," Will said tightly, vocal cords strained. "There was an injured civilian."
"Will, I take it personally that you think I'm judging you for your actions,"
Hannibal interrupts. He hasn't blinked once since Will's met his eyes. Silence will break, but eye contact, that is something Will must yield first, this time.
"It is not my place to judge you, and even if we didn't know each other as well as we do, I still wouldn't. There are 1,000 ways to kill someone, and a justification for each."
Will's brow creases. He sips more of his wine and looks down at his knee.
"I've never had to justify it before."
"This was your first?"
"Yes."
Hannibal's head tilts.
"How did it make you feel?"
The words scrape raw across Will's bruised tongue. A netted hook to snare the shark in place and keep it from searching swimming waters. He tries to think, to peel back the protective veil around how that moment made him feel. The thrill of it. Adrenaline has been his lifelong friend, dearer to him than an imaginary one from childhood. Cortisol, more treasured than a safety blanket.
"I felt powerful,"
he whispers, the truth of it exploding like bursting fruit. Sweet as honey and venomous.
"I liked killing Hobbs."
Hannibal's expression does not change.
"Killing must feel good to God, too. He does it all the time. And are we not made in his image?"
"Are you comparing me to God?" Will asks weakly, meeting his eyes again.
"God's fantastic," Hannibal says easily. "Dropped a roof on a church full of his worshippers while they sang their Sunday hymns. Do you think it was justified?"
Will's upper lip twitches. "I have a complicated relationship with religion."
How so?
Our ability to detect lies seems biblical, Will concedes, nodding slowly. He is unable to hold Hannibal's gaze, and looks instead to his near-empty wine glass. Hannibal stands to fetch the bottle to refill it. For a moment, the only sound is the gentle sloshing of liquid in Will's glass, over full. Hannibal's trying to get him drunk. A rather clumsy seduction method, but Will decides to let it work. Very Old Testament. I wonder if they felt it when Peter denied Jesus 3 times.
You'd think they would have felt it when Jesus preached and told them he was God's son. They would have known he was telling the truth.
Conviction tastes nicer than truth sometimes. Hannibal stops pouring and sets the bottle on the table between them, returning to his seat. One of his feet slots against Will's, shiny leather shoe against worn boot. Will imagines pushing into it, allowing a scandalous brush of their socks and ankles together.
In a world as mad as this one, power is a difficult thing to come by, Hannibal murmurs, breaking the silence first yet again.
Will meets his eyes.
No one would judge you for holding on to that feeling, for seeking it again.
Will wets his lips. Not exactly good advice, Doctor. Very easy to misconstrue.
Hannibal smiles.
Will stops drinking, setting his glass beside the half-empty bottle of wine.
I should go, he sighs, getting to his feet. He's not drunk, not even tipsy. He's fine to drive.
If Hannibal feels any kind of way about Will choosing to leave, he doesn't show it. Instead, he nods, sets his glass down, and gets to his feet so he can help Will into his coat. Will feels his arms, his large hands smoothing down Will's shoulders. Hears him breathe in, unsubtle, and feels the dig of the stag's horn into his shoulder blades. He tilts his head.
Did you just smell me?
Difficult to avoid, Hannibal replies, unapologetic as Will turns to face him.
This close, Will must tilt his face up to meet his eyes.
You wear a rather unfortunate aftershave. Smells like something with a ship on the bottle.
Will's lip twitches. I keep getting it for Christmas. He lies, a little white lie, just to see Hannibal's jaw clench in brief agony.
Hannibal doesn't press. Drive safely, Will.
I promise, Will says. And because he can't think of a reason why not, he leans in and presses his lips to Hannibal's cheek, a hand smoothed over his chest. He feels Hannibal's heart race, pounding like a drum at the brief contact. And when Will pulls back, Hannibal looks a little starstruck. He thinks of God and lightning strikes and smiles.
Dinner tomorrow?
Hannibal swallows loudly and nods.
I'd be honored.
Alana visits him, her heart heavy with Abigail's plight. Will has been hearing noises in the wall. The torn open chimney glares at them like a panting creature, jaw wide open, a basking shark in the middle of Will's living room. She walks with him in search of the injured animal he heard during the night and tries to give him white light platitudes that rest sour sweet on his tongue.
Do you think she's innocent? She asks.
Will wants to lie to her. No, he says. But just because she isn't doesn't mean she deserves what she gets. Would one blame her for offering a rabbit to a hungry wolf if it kept her alive for another day? It's clearly not what she wants to hear. Her face is pale and her eyes heavy with rainwater. She is a glacial mountain stream, refreshing after a long hike on a hot summer day. But no place for a shark.
I'm worried about you, Will.
Ah, she's done with lying, he supposes. You don't need to worry about me, Alana. He lies, and pictures stag horns sprouting from her back. They look wrong on her, too large and bent out of shape. She does not wear them well. She cups his face and he turns his head away, balking at her gentleness. A tortured creature like him doesn't understand kind touch. He watches her go, shoulders his coat, and drives to Hannibal's house in the dead of night. Snow falls and light flurries, just enough to render fog lights useless. A cascade of dandruff fat flakes hinting at a severe storm brewing. Will might get snowed in. He raps on Hannibal's door and then lets himself in, dusting his coat off as Hannibal rounds the corner to find him there. He's down-dressed in only 2 pieces of his 3-piece suit and looks delighted, if surprised, to see Will there. Alana tried to kiss me, Will tells him, and knows from the set of Hannibal's shoulders and the displeased line of his mouth that Hannibal feels the truth of it. She thought it would fix me. Kind of fairy tale, wouldn't you agree? Hannibal approaches him, taking Will's frigid hands between both of his own and warming them with gentle squeezes. His fingertips tingle with pins and needles. Hannibal's gentleness always comes at a price. He has always been a source of pain for Will. Maybe he doesn't know any better, but it would be surreal to have him any other way.
"What was she trying to fix?"
he asks instead. Will swallows, sighing heavily. "I'm hallucinating again," he confesses quietly. "Heard an animal. There was no animal. She knew that. She went along with it anyway." His upper lip twitches back. "She's accommodating. I'll give her that."
"We're often taught not to challenge the delusions of our patients until they're on medication, at risk of drawing them into doing something rash."
Will scoffs.
"Will you agree to meet with my friend now?"
"I don't have any other choice," Will concedes, morose. "They're getting worse. I'm not so delusional as to not know that."
Hannibal nods and brings Will's hands to his lips, pressing, warm and soft. "I'll call him now. Would you like to sit in the study? I have more of the wine we shared the other night."
"Sure." Hannibal nods, drawing Will in as surely as the spider lured the fly. Will kisses him on the cheek again before he settles on the plush, comfortable leather couch. He doesn't reach for the wine. In the belly of Hannibal's study, the walls climb up into oppressive darkness. There is light here, but it's low, dimmed down to minimum settings. He wonders absently if Hannibal has a light sensitivity. The rooms he's in are always so dark. All the better to let facial tics and reactions go unnoticed. Will thinks of Red Riding Hood, and wonders if there was ever a version of the story where she ate the wolf first. Hannibal returns swiftly, noting that Will has not served himself a glass. He goes to his liquor cabinet by the curtains. Will watches him move, feline and assured in his own space. Lord of all, he surveys. He pulls Hannibal to sit beside him and takes the offered glass. Hannibal places a hand on his forehead, and Will leans into it.
"You're warm," Hannibal says.
"I've always had a mild fever," Will tells him. "Comes with the territory."
"Oh?
Being your mate?" Will's teeth feel too sharp, grinding his tongue to dumb mulch, unable to hold his words back. "I've been in pain all my life." He smiles too widely. "You're a liar, Dr. Lecter. I just don't know what you're lying about."
"I've always been honest with you, Will,"
Hannibal says quietly. "To my face." Will leans his cheek on Hannibal's shoulder, marveling at the solidness of muscle that greets him. Beneath his suits, Hannibal is strong and well-built. Capable, predatory, like a shark. "It must be really bad. I've felt it all my life." Hannibal's fingers curl a little too tightly around the stem of his glass. His other hand settles on Will's knee. "I'm used to it," Will rasps, nuzzling Hannibal's shoulder, wrinkling the fabric of his vest. His stubble scratches dully, and he hopes Hannibal feels it. "Maybe one day you'll tell me."
"I can't think of what it might be," Hannibal murmurs.
"Liar." Pain stabs hot behind his eyes, settles like a clawed fist in his chest. He shudders and sips his wine before turning closer into Hannibal's space, practically plastered to his side. Hannibal moves his hand and instead drapes his arm across Will's shoulders, holding him closer. "Liar, liar, liar." "Do you have a lot of experience with men?" Will asks.
"Several liaisons in my youth," Hannibal replies.
It's a plebeian truth, unimportant, but it soothes the pain of the grand lie.
"Not for some time, but I'm sure I can remember all the old tricks."
Will snorts, grinning into Hannibal's shoulder. "You're lousy at seduction."
"It seems wasted on you," Hannibal agrees. "You like what you like."
"I'd like to spend the night," Will whispers, bold in this claustrophobic yet cavernous room. The Minotaur lived in a place like this, knowing only pain. If Theseus had greeted him like a friend, would their story have ended differently? Would a beast that knew nothing but violence and hunger have given him the chance? Hannibal's arms tighten around him. He turns his head as Will lifts his, their lips meeting in a hard press together, jaws clenched, then opening at the same time. Will's tongue is tender, but it's euphoric to feel someone else's teeth on it.
"Still at my beck and call,"
Will gasps when they part for air. Hannibal's eyes are black and ruthless, spearing him in place. Will's curiosity brought him here, to the belly of the beast, far larger and older than he is, and he's caught in the netting,
twisting and slicing himself open for his lover to feast on his blood.
Always,
Hannibal breathes. Will smiles and kisses him again. Dr. Sutcliffe is a tall, meek man. He defers to Hannibal like a peasant to his liege lord. Will immediately doesn't trust him. The test comes back negative, despite the fact that Will actively hallucinated while in the MRI machine. It's all in his head, Hannibal tells him. Pain lashes hot down his back like a fiery tongue. He clenches his jaw and makes a mental note to seek out another opinion as soon as he can. The Ripper strikes that night, slices Sutcliffe open at the jaw, leaving him bent back, farther than even an anglerfish could muster, silencing him so that Will couldn't tell if he was lying. Artful in its way. Clumsy in every other. Will watches in his mind's eye as a man with no face enters Sutcliffe's office, guides him to his chair, comes up behind him, perhaps to look at a file over his shoulder. It was quick, merciful even. Only a meek man would have let him get that close. Puzzle pieces fall together in front of Will's eyes, slotting neatly into place. I'm sorry about Sutcliffe, he whispers to Hannibal, another consultation already scheduled in his phone. Tomorrow morning, bright and early. He won't be staying the night.
He was a dear friend,
Hannibal rasps, for all the world a repentant, shocked former colleague and friend.
It's a terrible fate. I understand his secretary found him the morning after.
There aren't many leads, Will says. The cameras were off. Budget cuts. No night security.
A pity.
Will watches him and feels his bones heat, baking like a potato in foil. The armor doesn't feel so strong anymore. Will you be attending his funeral?
Of course.
I'll go with you, Will tells him. I wouldn't want you to be alone. Hannibal smiles at him, a pale falsehood. He would like Will there. He does not need Will to be there. Company softens the blow of grief, but there is no grief. Will gets his diagnosis, encephalitis. How long was Hannibal hiding that? He hides his pills and makes sure he won't take them in Hannibal's company, stuffs them into his aspirin bottle for good measure. He hasn't seen the stag since the night he went wandering.
Closure. Do you see it?
The puzzle pieces are starting to form a greater picture. Antlers and black skin and nightshade eyes. It's beautiful in its way, but maybe that's just because it looks like Hannibal when he squints. Will accompanies Hannibal home after the funeral. It was a lovely affair, well stocked with mourners. Sutcliffe's wife gave a heartfelt, tear-jerking speech. Even Will felt his eyes well up. It was enough to ignore the low-grade thrum of dishonesty when she spoke about how good of a husband and father he was, able to balance his home life with his diligent work schedule. A workaholic. He and Hannibal have that in common. The Ripper is restless. Another body will turn up that night. He feels it the same way animals feel rain coming.
Can I make it better?
Will asks, as Hannibal takes his coat and hangs it, watching Will kick off his boots in the foyer.
You do, just by being here,
Hannibal replies. Another sour, sweet half-lie. Will would provide comfort if Hannibal needed it, but he doesn't need it, so Will's presence is just a perk. The bottle of antiviral meds sits like a stone in the bottom of Will's bag. He draws Hannibal closer and kisses him, allowing Hannibal to plant him against the closed front door. Hannibal's lips and hands are hungry. Death has always prompted a retaliatory reminder of life. Drinking, laughing, fucking. When Will's father died, he did none of the above. But maybe, if he'd had Hannibal with him, things would have been different. He holds Hannibal at the shoulders and spreads his legs, letting Hannibal rut between them. He's hard. Of course he is. The aftermath of murder settles like a good meal. A proud predator glutted on conquest. Will slides his hands into Hannibal's hair and is surprised when he doesn't feel horns. He pulls back with a gasp, breathing hard as Hannibal kisses his jaw, down his throat, finding his own hammering pulse. The Ripper felt powerful, robbing Will of answers. Answers only Hannibal knew to rob him of. Sutcliffe's files are under lock and key. It won't be long before Jack comes knocking, seeing Will as one of his recent patients. The primal fear of survivalism cries for an alibi. He was netted up, caught. He couldn't have possibly been the culprit. Hannibal will be his alibi. He knows, which means Will must be Hannibal's. Hunters only hunt together when there is an advantage, after all. His fingers twist in Hannibal's hair, hauling him up for another kiss that robs them both of breath. Before he pushes Hannibal away again, and slowly sinks to his knees, Hannibal's eyes, black as ocean depths, follow him down. He twists his fingers in Will's hair and pulls the netting tight. "Is this okay?" Will asks, fumbling at Hannibal's suit pants, undoing the button, sliding down the zipper.
"Yes."
Honesty washes over him like golden light, a snarl that raises the hair on the back of his neck. Will pulls Hannibal's cock out through the opening in the front of his silk boxers. Of course they're silk, slippery and soft and burning Will's fingertips. He's large, and Will's throat is tender. Will takes him in, slow and untried, but eager enough. Hannibal's fingers flex, tighten, nails digging into his scalp. His eyes go heavy-lidded, and he leans against the door, free fist clenching hard enough his knuckles go white.
"Relax your jaw,"
he coaxes. Will obeys, closing his eyes, and is rewarded with another few inches plugging his throat.
"That's it. That's good, Will."
It's honest and makes him feel hot all over, pleasant and tingling. He drops a hand to squeeze himself through his slacks, groaning when Hannibal's leaking cockhead pushes deeper into his throat, stuffing him full. His nose brushes up against the bunched-up silk. He tries to swallow, can't, feels saliva pool and leak out of the corners of his mouth. Hannibal takes the lead, holding Will's head steady with his knuckles cushioning Will's skull from the door, sliding in and out of his mouth with ease. He's free, curiously nosing at the netting around Will, uncaring for how his testing nips to free his mate shed more of Will's blood. The water is streaked with it. Will shudders, lightheaded, slackens his jaw and squeezes his cock again. It hurts. Everything hurts. But it feels good, too. Maybe he was always destined to associate the two things, pleasure and pain. It seems fitting for creatures like them. Hannibal's pace quickens, his breathing loud amidst Will's gasps and half-plugged chokes whenever he gets a chance to breathe. His scalp prickles with the force of Hannibal's grip. His knees ache against the hardwood floor. His throat swells tenderly, throbbing in time with his heartbeat. Tears gather in his eyes that he wouldn't shed during the funeral. He lets them slip now, thick and salty and hot. Hannibal lowers his other hand, drags his thumb along Will's cheek to catch the tears as they fall. He moves faster, fucking Will's mouth with focused drive. Will curls his other hand around the back of his thigh, urging him on. In his mind's eye, Hannibal is tall and antlered, bursting at the seams with it. It suits him much better than Alana. Hannibal shudders, hips stuttering, and Will makes a wild, hungry noise in his chest, pulling Hannibal deeper in his throat and holding fast.
"Don't stop now. Not when it's just getting good. Not when the lines have blurred and the puzzle is taking shape and Will's gagging for it, quite literally this time."
With a muted snarl, a reverberated growl, Hannibal's cock twitches, feels even harder. He shoves Will against the door and presses as deep as he can, crushing Will to his pelvis as he starts coming. It clogs Will's throat, and he fights against the urge to gag and choke, swallowing on reflex. Hysterically, he hopes he grows gills so that he never has to come up for air again. He sucks weakly as Hannibal softens, unwilling to let his prize go, until Hannibal shudders and pulls back with a hiss. He hauls Will up to his unsteady feet and kisses him, bruised mouth and tear-stained and all, and puts his hand over Will's on his clothed cock.
"You're remarkable,"
Hannibal breathes, wild and relentless. Will groans, teeth bared, sinking into Hannibal's shoulder as he shudders and comes. It feels like a wrecking ball, another world-tilting axis. Flavored conviction sour and honest praise sweet.
"Will."
Will. God. One and the same. Will digs his teeth in deeper and hopes it welts. He flattens his hand on Hannibal's nape and holds him close.
"Mine,"
he thinks, as he finally wriggles free of the net and swims under the attentive eyes of his mate. Hannibal keeping close to make sure Will does not get snared again, that he is strong enough to be of use as a companion as they wade into deeper waters. Will never wants to come up for air. He tastes blood. He bit clean through, not the cloth, but the skin beneath. Victory thrills through him, bright as birdsong. Hannibal exhales, accepting Will's mark on him, with a nuzzle and breathless kiss to Will's sticky jaw.
"Come,"
he commands, taking Will's hand.
"I'll run a bath for you."
Will huffs tiredly, exhausted, elated. Okay. Jack raps on the door like the doomsday clock. Will feels Hannibal rise from bed, leaving an inviting pit of warmth behind. He grumbles sleepily and is given a hand in his hair and a gentle kiss to his forehead as penance for waking him. Hannibal dresses in pajama pants and a big red sweater, too comfortable and cozy for the situation, Will thinks. Will listens to him go downstairs, open the door, let Jack in. Pain burns brightly down his spine, cascading over his ribs. Ah, time for a show. He hauls himself from the bed and picks up the first thing he finds, Hannibal's shirt. Will slacks from the funeral the day before. He pulls them on and knows the buttons are uneven. The shirt is too large for him, sloping down his shoulders, revealing all the bruises and bite marks. He's sure he looks like one of those bodice ripper cover girls. He pads downstairs on bare, silent feet, circling closer to the too curious creature that wanders into his mate's lair.
"Can you account for your whereabouts last night?"
Jack asks. "He was with me, Jack," Will says, before Hannibal can answer. Jack whirls on him, and for a moment the stag is at Jack's shoulder, in Hannibal's space, blustering, hot-breathed, and eager as Will enters the kitchen and takes his place at Hannibal's side. "We came here after Sutcliffe's funeral. We've been here all night." It's not true, but Will doesn't know it's not true. For a moment, the axis holds. Jack frowns at him, jaw bulging, eyes wide.
"There was another murder last night,"
he says sharply, looking between them.
"Two victims. Hearts missing. Can anyone else confirm your story?"
"I'm sure my neighbors saw me arrive," Hannibal says mildly, one hand snaking around Will's waist. "If any of them were awake, they will confirm that my car didn't move. Will's is at his home."
He pauses for emphasis.
"We were, rather distracted. No chance of sneaking off."
The sour, sweet knot lie tastes like Hannibal's sweat. Will swallows it down eagerly and basks in the current. His hips press against the cover of the kitchen island, behind which he and Hannibal are standing. Hannibal's fingers dig into his skin, not a warning, but a flicker of shared excitement. Hannibal's hands are warmer than they've ever been, sharing Will's fever.
"Well?"
Jack huffs, clears his throat, and runs a hand over his mouth.
"I suppose it's good you're here then, Will. I have another crime scene for you to look at."
"I'd be happy to," Will purrs, and leans against Hannibal for good measure. "After I clean up, shower, find a change of clothes." Jack is not the kind of man who blushes easily.
"This,"
he gestures between them,
"seems rather unprofessional. Don't you agree, Doctor?"
"Perhaps," Hannibal concedes. There's a mark in the shape of Will's teeth, just visible on the hollow of his throat, where his sweater sags. It looks like shark teeth.
"But you see, Agent Crawford, Will and I quickly realized we were soulmates. We've behaved entirely professionally while in our sessions, but I don't think anyone can blame us for examining the potential closeness that bond brings."
Jack's eyes narrow shrewdly.
"Soulmates?"
he repeats. Will and Hannibal nod in tandem. If anything, that seems to appease Jack. They cannot lie without showing signs of pain. If only he knew how good they were at hiding it.
"I'll text you the crime scene location,"
he tells Will.
"I want you there at 10 a.m. sharp."
Will nods. "I'll see you out," Hannibal offers, and releases Will to escort Jack out of the labyrinth. Lucky Theseus. Will smiles and draws Hannibal close when he returns, kissing him soundly. "Hearts, huh?" he teases. Hannibal tilts his head and says nothing. Will sighs, cups his face, meets his eyes. "Hannibal," he says kindly, brushing his thumb at the corner of Hannibal's mouth. "Is this another courting gift?" Hannibal's eyes flash. His expression flickers. For a moment, not entirely a man. Shock ricochets down Will's arm, an instinctive flare of familiar pain. He opens his mouth, and Will shushes him before he can speak.
"I already know when you're lying to me,"
he reminds Hannibal. Indecision is not an expression Hannibal wears well. It sits on him like an ill-fitting suit. Will tries to kiss it again, and is very aware of how close the knife block is. Innocuous enough on the kitchen island, but still very much within reach.
"Please don't lie to me,"
he pleads, soft and beseeching. His mate is solitary by nature. He doesn't know how to extend compassion, but Will can teach him.
"I can tolerate sins of omission, but not outright lies."
His voice has an edge,
serrated teeth by the row, ready to plunge deep. He shed the net and now swims free. Hannibal releases a breath, his hand flexing along Will's tender ribcage.
"And if it is," he murmurs, nuzzling close, "another courting gift."
Will smiles. "I've never had heart before," he says. "Is it tender?"
"Like butter, if cooked right."
Will hums and presses his hand to Hannibal's chest. "I used to imagine steel around mine," he says. "Armor on my bones. It was a stupid mental exercise. Something to convince myself that my pain wasn't real. That even if every part of my body gave into it, that the metal would keep me upright and moving." Hannibal tilts his head, pressing his nose to Will's hair. He breathes in, hesitating.
"Your fever is cooling," he notes.
Will grins against his bitten throat. "I can still keep you warm," he replies. "Forever, if you'll let me." Hannibal's fingers tighten, slide to Will's hip. He can probably feel all of Will, half hard and eager against him, subtly rocking along with the ocean tides. His exhale, when it comes, is shuddery, cataclysmic.
"You won't want to be late for Jack."
Will hums and kisses Hannibal's tender throat. Fitting, he thinks, that they're both sore all over now. He'll keep Hannibal subtly aching forever, if he has his way. It's only fair.
"Did it make you feel powerful?" he asks.
"No," Hannibal confesses, awash with berry sweet honesty.
"I've never felt more vulnerable in my life."
"I feel powerful," Will murmurs, drawing back so their eyes can meet. "You told me to chase this feeling, to hold on to it. Do you regret that advice?" Hannibal's other hand takes Will from his face. Will's fingers curl, and Hannibal kisses his knuckles. He shakes his head. "There are no church roofs coming for you, Hannibal. Not yet." He straightens his fingers and catches Hannibal's chin, forcing their eyes to meet again. "I can live with the pain." Another flash. His mate is utterly bewildered. It settles around Will's skull and shoulders like a safety blanket. He kisses Hannibal, then, and laughs when Hannibal turns him and plants him against the kitchen island, ravenous.
"Will."
"Will. God. One and the same." "I have to go meet Jack," Will reminds him, though he would much rather stay here, in this vast expanse of dangerous ocean, with the most bestial monster inside it at his side. Hannibal's nostrils flare as he breathes out, irritated at the reminder. "When I come back," Hannibal meets his eyes, "you'll feed me your heart." Hannibal nods, stunned into silence. Will kisses him again and draws away to return upstairs, to shower and change. No knife-wielding murderer follows him up. Instead, Hannibal joins him in the shower, meek and worshipful, and as he confesses to Will under the sun-hot spray of the water, hands wandering and warm and just where Will wants them, Will feels no pain. Instead, he feels closure, and it breathes itself deep into his skin like the touch of golden sunlight. The End.
I love you.